34. In sharp contrast to Laughlin's and Lupinetti's latest violent encounter with police and Archer, Nicky was managing to keep a much lower profile. After being handed the list of items for Kat's two vital imminent procedures, he'd secured Dr. Tawani to the other motel room bed with duct tape he bought in readiness, making sure the surgeon couldn't make any noise by putting a strip over his mouth. He gave Kat a quick check, too. She was awake but clearly in a lot of pain and only seemed to be semi-aware of what was going on. He'd given her the last of the oxycodone taken from the biker, but could see that it was beginning to wear off. He then returned to the store in the doctor's Mercedes. The man's phone started ringing as he was driving, but he waited for it to ring out, and a few seconds later, a text came up on the car's interior screen. "Your brother's kids already ate most of the potato chips. Can you get more?" Nicky guessed from the female name that it was from the surgeon's wife. No sign of her being worried yet of her husband's non-appearance at home, so she hadn't raised the alarm. Good. That gave him and Kat a bit more time. Nicky parked in the lot at Wegmans and took the phone with him as he quickly walked inside the store, glancing at the Mustang he'd taken from the biker's scrapyard, which he'd abandoned there earlier. By the time it was discovered, he'd hoped to be long gone. He went from aisle to aisle, quickly collecting the items the doctor had put on the list. He wanted to get back to the motel as soon as he could, concerned that the surgeon would find a way to escape from his binds, or despite the Do Not Disturb tag over the door handle. A cleaner working room to room might unlock the door and discover them. With Kat deteriorating too, there was no time to waste. Nicky took the opportunity to collect some antiseptic zinc oxide cream as well. His back still sore from getting scraped over the speed bump at Gatlin when he was under the laundry truck. He paid for the supplies at the checkout. Then, when he got back behind the wheel and drove out of the lot, another store caught his eye. Unless you want her to scream so loud they hear her in the next county, she's going to need something to numb the pain, the doctor had warned him. Nicky made a stop outside the wines and spirits outlet. Pennsylvania's strict alcohol laws recently relaxed slightly to allow sales on Sunday, and bought a small bottle of Jim Beam, showing his fake ID when the clerk asked for it. Like in the supermarket and the lot outside of Wegmans, the cameras around the place felt as if they were scorching his skin as they captured his image. But getting a hold of these supplies was vital. Last of all, he stopped to buy a Leatherman multi-tool pocket knife from a Lowe's he'd also seen on the drive there, then drove quickly back to the motel. "Give her some of the whiskey," Tawani told him once Nicky had returned and cut him free. The supplies in the bag laid out on the table in the room. The prison fugitive unscrewed the bottle, found a glass in the bathroom, and after tilting Kat's head back, tipped the alcohol into her mouth. She was able to put down three pours, coughing from the first as the liquid burned her dry throat. Feeding someone with previous addiction problems oxycodone and liquor in close order wasn't exactly ideal, but that was a problem for another day. He'd already taken the revolver from her hand and tucked it back into his pocket, before making sure the Do Not Disturb tag on the door was still in place. In the meantime, Tawani pulled some latex gloves and unbuttoned Kat's shirt before using a set of scissors purchased from the store to snip away the rudimentary padding and bandages that Nicky had first applied after they split from the truck robbery. Now the doc had scissors in hand. Nicky wasn't taking his eyes off him for 1 second. 12 years in federal prison and all. But instead of trying to stab him, Tawani removed the last of the gauze, put the scissors down, and as Nicky took them away, he saw the wound again. The bullet hole was between two of her ribs on her right side. Standing out starkly against the pale, smooth skin, but 24 hours had passed since she was shot, which he knew meant sepsis could have already set in, the bacteria from the wound's internal damage spreading into her bloodstream. "Turn that light on," Tawani told Nicky, pointing to a built-in light beside the bed. As Nicky flicked the switch, the doctor opened several antiseptic wipes and used them to carefully clean the area around the wound. Then he picked up two pairs of tweezers, fresh from the packet like the scissors. "This might take some finding," he warned. "Get her ready." Nikki took a pillow and positioned it carefully so the end was over Kat's mouth, but left her nose clear. She took the hint and drew in a deep breath before biting down on the fabric. He steadied her, then nodded to the doctor beside him. Three pours of Kentucky bourbon were enough to render Catherine nicely buzzed, but she still screamed into the pillow as Tawani pushed one set of the tweezers into the bullet hole, then released them in order to stretch the wound open, before searching for the metal slug with the second set. "Nothing?" Nikki asked anxiously. "There are shards of rib everywhere. It's making it difficult," he said, before withdrawing the tweezers to reset, leaving the first set in place. Kat started crying. With one free hand, Nikki tipped the other shot of whiskey into a glass, and she drank it before he put the pillow back, and Tawani dug in for the bullet again, eliciting another muffled scream as Nikki held her still. "There," the doctor said with satisfaction, his passion for his work making him temporarily forget where he was and the circumstances he was operating under. Nikki caught a glimpse of the blood-smeared metal as Tawani slowly and gently coaxed the bullet out. Once it was free, Nikki eyed the flattened piece of metal held between the prongs of the tweezers. "Oh, thank you," he said before looking at Kat and seeing she was still having difficulty breathing. "Oh, we're not done yet," Tawani told him. He placed the bullet carefully on the bedside table, removed the first set of tweezers still holding the wound open, and then used some clean gauze and more antiseptic to wipe around the entire area, before applying adhesive surgical tape strips and padding to patch the wound. "Now that lung needs to be reinflated." From the time he'd been a high school student over 35 years ago, Ramesh Tawani's parents had taught him the importance of being punctual. His wife was also a creature of habit. They both got up in the morning at the same time, ate breakfast, and were out the door heading for their respective practices at 7:45 a.m. sharp, taking turns to drop off their kids at school on the way. The end of the day also followed a routine, and on the occasion that either would be late, they always called to let the other know. Therefore, his non-appearance from collecting the final list of groceries for their kids' birthday party was highly unusual. Waiting anxiously at their home with family members who had already arrived, his wife had just called the hospital where they confirmed that Ramesh had left over an hour ago. After trying his cell a few more times, she started to become increasingly worried. The tally of unanswered calls was now up to 10. So the next contact was to the police. "He was heading to the Wegmans in town when I last spoke to him," she told the 911 operator. "Could he have run into a friend or maybe having car trouble, ma'am? He's not been gone that long." "Yeah, but you don't understand. My husband's never late for anything. He knew he had to get home to help me set up. And when he's not in surgery, he always answers his phone." "You said he was going to Wegmans?" "That's right, the one on Peach Street." The call was put to a local police unit, and a pair of Erie PD officers who weren't far from the large store responded before taking the turn and pulling into the lot less than a minute later. They were given the plates for the man's Mercedes, but although they couldn't see the parked car anywhere, decided to take a look inside the supermarket as they were here anyway.
"Oh, I'd love to have me one of those,"
one of them said after a brief whistle, eyeing up a red Mustang they passed as the two officers walked towards the large building's entrance. Around the same time the two cops had told one of the checkout staff why they were there and were being taken to the security camera room with the shift manager, back at the Motel 6, Tawani searched through the bags Nikki had bought and withdrew two items, a bike pump and a 2-liter bottle of water.
"Okay, empty most of that out,"
he said, passing the bottle to Nikki, who hesitated.
"I'm not going to run. I'll do it myself if I have to."
He rose to follow Nikki into the bathroom and watched as he poured 3/4 of the contents into the sink. "Now, you need to," Tawani said, but Nikki was already picking up the bike pump.
He cut its plastic tubing free with the Leatherman, clipping it into two lengths, one short and one long. He wiped down both with the antiseptic, then stuck one end of each length into the empty bottle, the longer section going into the remaining water. He then used some of the tape he'd bound the doctor's hands and feet with earlier to seal the top of the bottle. Nikki placed the bottle by the bed as they both returned to Kat. "Okay, I have to make an incision," the doctor told her. Taking the Leatherman pocket knife, Nikki cautiously passed to him. "Can I do that?" She nodded, her focus slightly blurry from the booze, but she was still sober enough to be frightened. "Okay, get her ready again." Nikki got back into position with the pillow, his eyes still on the knife, as Tawani used the final antiseptic wipes 2 inches below the bullet hole. He wiped the blade and then used it to make a cut. Kat biting into the pillow, but not screaming this time. The alcohol taking stronger effect now and doing its job to temporarily numb the pain. After Nikki took charge of the Leatherman again, Tawani fed the length of the longer tube into Kat's side and turned his head to instruct Nikki, but the escaped convict was already lifting the bottle. Bubbles started to come out of the length of tubing, dangling in the water, remaining inside. "Okay, come on, young lady," Tawani said. "Let it work." She suddenly took a deep breath and exhaled, breathing in and out again like normal. The lung reinflated. "How did you know how to?" Tawani asked. Nikki didn't answer, instead offering his hand. The doctor, confused by this strange young man, peeled off his glove and shook it. Back in Cleveland, having just returned to the cheap hotel from visiting Blair O'Mara at her home in Pepper Pike, Marquez had entered the room Archer had booked for another 24 hours and let the door close on itself behind her. She twisted the lock, then wandered towards the bed, her neck and shoulders sore, her eyes still dry and tired from the all-night drive. Wearing a detective badge regularly meant losing sleep and disturbed nights. She'd become conditioned to it over the years, but also knew to rest when she could. Fatigue could also cause her to miss important details, clues which could affect the outcome of a case or end up costing or saving someone's life, including her own. She'd have plenty to think about, but could do that while she took a shower before a quick lie down. An hour's rest and she'd be ready to rock and roll again. She went through to the bathroom and dropped a mat onto the floor before turning on the shower, then moved back next door to remove her Smith & Wesson sidearm in its holster and place it on the bed. A backup pistol followed, strapped to her ankle, and she kicked off her shoes before peeling off her clothes. She went back into the bathroom and tested the water before stepping under the showerhead. She stood beneath the spray for almost 2 full minutes, enjoying the sensation of the hot water beating down onto her tired shoulders, then started to use a fresh bar of soap provided by the hotel. Up next was her hair. Despite having washed it at the motel outside Gatlin on Friday night, she'd smelt traces of pepper spray during the ride here from Virginia. But when she looked at the small bottle the hotel had left in the stall, decided she wanted to use her own shampoo. Keeping the water running, she stepped out and wrapped a towel around her to keep from making the tiled bathroom floor slippery, then padded through to the main bedroom. She found the bottle in her wash bag and started to walk back to the shower. Water was still splashing in the tub, the mirror in the main room misting up from the steam wafting through the open door. Her feet silent on the carpeted floor. Out of habit, Marquez glanced at the main door to her room on her way back to the bathroom. And she stopped. The peephole leading to the outside corridor had been showing light before, but right now it was dark. A tiny detail, but something she noticed. She stayed still, one hand keeping her towel wrapped around her. Someone stopped outside to text on a phone, maybe. Or a trick of the light. Or someone was standing right outside the door. Placing the bottle of shampoo on the floor, she took one slow step after another towards the door, holding her towel around her, keeping to the wall to avoid creating a moving shadow that could be seen under the door. She was two steps away, then one, before she heard a tiny click. It was the same one she'd heard a few minutes ago, when she used the key card to unlock the room. Archer, she thought. But it couldn't be. He was already gone, and he'd knock first, not just walk in. The handle to the door started to push down very slowly. Marquez watched it just the other side of the door, but at the last moment, her hand went up, and stepping forward, she eased the small security bar lock across. The metal didn't make any sound. The hinges were well oiled. She moved back silently, and the door then started to open equally, quietly. Equally, slowly. It stopped when it reached the end of the security bar. The door was now open now, although only by an inch. Marquez stood perfectly still, occasional beads of water dripping from her hair to the carpet with tiny, quiet thuds. The door remained where it was on the end of the lock bar, but then it closed again. A few seconds later, a small length of card slid into the gap towards the lock bar, and with the door now almost shut, the card pushed the lock bar away from the bolt, removing the last barrier. But the moment the door had closed, Marquez had shifted rapidly. She pulled on her jeans and t-shirt, then slipped her Smith & Wesson handgun from its holster. Her heart going like a trip hammer as she took cover behind the bed and held her breath. She watched as the card was slowly pulled back and lifted her pistol up with the safety off. The shower was still running. The mirror by now was a complete wall of mist, the steam from the shower still drifting into the room. She had her gun aimed at the door, held rock solid, looking down the sights. But then her cell phone started ringing, right there on the bed. Her eyes darted to it, then up to the door. A pause followed. Would whoever was out there think that she'd leave the shower to answer it? The answer was yes. An instant later, the unlocked door to the room was kicked back. She couldn't shoot in that moment, not knowing who it was, but saw in the doorway the outline of two large men wearing balaclava ski masks, both carrying a raised weapon. And they saw her, too. She dropped to the carpet behind the bed as a suppressed burst of bullets chewed up the cheap hotel room, smashing the window opposite the door and destroying the TV, tufts of mattress spraying into the air. The door was being held open by whoever was firing the submachine guns, feathers and pieces of fabric flying around Marquez like confetti as she stayed low. She moved up to the end of the bed and blasted back several times in the direction of the door, her gunshots echoing harshly unlike theirs. Another half magazine's worth of bullets ripped up more of the room, shattering what was left of the window. A few of the bullets showering Marquez with more feathers from the destroyed pillowcases as she retreated back closer to the wall and fired again at the door. The entry point to the room was narrow, and she was just managing to keep them back, but knew she couldn't for much longer. She was cornered, and in her desperation, thought of Archer jumping off that bridge the other night to survive. However, there was no water beneath her room, just concrete. She looked at the almost completely obliterated window, the glass covering the carpet below it, and a chair knocked over at the end of the bed. The room was on the first floor, overlooking the street, and she remembered that there was an awning directly below. She could survive the drop, but the glass would have shred her bare feet before she could get to the window. She lunged forward to retrieve her shoes, then pulled back as whoever was firing from the door resumed with a fresh magazine, hitting where she'd been a moment ago. The wall below the window now a mass of bullet holes. With both guys firing at once, she knew they'd have to reload and waited for a pause. When it came, she pushed herself back up to her feet and fired at the door repeatedly as she ran for the window. Down on the street below, a sedan had pulled up outside the hotel about a minute ago. The driver talking to the porter when they'd heard gunshots coming from somewhere above. They'd both gone for cover just inside the building's entrance as they peered up uncertainly. A figure tore through the awning and hit the roof of the car hard. The person bounced onto the hood, then rolled and landed onto the concrete, face down, before lying completely still. The two men saw she was a Latina woman, with wet shoulder-length dark hair, a handgun resting in her grip on the ground. She laid there, unmoving, blood slowly starting to pool on the concrete around her head. Shocked, the driver looked up through the damaged awning to see where the hell this woman could have fallen from, and caught the briefest glimpse of two figures looking down from a window a floor above. But seconds later, they were gone.